This is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, originally broadcast on Edge Radio 99.3 FM, and proudly brought to you by our friends at Polymorph Games and Hobbies. Find them at polymorphgames.com.au.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Episode 179 of The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. My name is Trent.
I'm Garth.
I'm Mark.
And tonight's episode brought to you by our friends at Polymorph Games and Hobbies, polymorphgames.com.au. They support us. Please support them. Remember when morphing was a thing?
Morphing.
Like a special effect.
Oh, with photos, yes.
Thing.
Yes.
And, you know, you would, like Michael Jackson changing into a cheetah and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
That's around about the time of Terminator 2, Liquid Metal Man,
yeah,
could be a little tie into something we're talking about a little bit later in the show.
And as an aside, in Little Old Hobart Town tonight, yes, tonight, there is a 3D screening of Terminator 2 happening.
Get out of town.
No. Everything, if I was, I wouldn't be here.
Everything old is new again, which explains why Mark just keeps on coming back to the show.
Yeah.
What are we talking about tonight?
We are going to talk about some of the games we've been playing, including Mistfall. We've got an interview with the amazing Australian game design studio Rule and Make to talk about their new game they launched at Gen Con, which might have something to do with a certain liquid metal robot. We are going to talk about what came out of, I don't know if anyone can hear me because that music's really loud, games that came out of Gen Con. And yeah, I'm sure we're going to have lots of arguments.
You do know this show is not just in your head. Like, other people are listening.
Not listening, not
we
listening,
all, we also
not
have
listening,
a competition,
not listening, not listening.
A competition with thanks to Grail Games that we will certainly be talking up.
All that and more.
All right, let's turn the music up real loud this time. It's a bit of Mastodon to get us started tonight on the Dice Men. Come on.
Oh, that was some of the finest, smoothest, silky R&B jazz of Mastodon with Sleeping Giant here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh, proudly supported tonight by polymorphgames.com.au. And remember, put in the code DICEMEN, DICEMEN, all in capitals, one word, to get your extra 10% extra 5% off of already the lowest board game prices in Australia.
So the link from that Mastodon track to what we've been playing lately is that that's from the Blood Mountain album, which was their concept album, kind of like a D&D adventure, climbing up a mountain, fighting monsters.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a little bit like what we've been playing lately, which has been Mistfall, published by Passport Games. Was a Kickstarter back in 2015, followed by the Hearts of the Mists expansion. So, yeah, we're right up to date with this one. I purchased this in Adelaide, actually, a couple of months back. I only just got it to the table a few weeks ago. Designed by, I'm going to have a crack at this, Blase Kabuki?
Kabaki?
Kabaki.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I just love the fact that when you search it on BGG, it just goes, this person is a user. I just find that funny.
Yeah.
All the time.
What, as opposed to a designer?
Yeah. You're just a user.
Oh.
Anyway.
That's a bit unfair. Mistfall, or as we've been calling it, Fistmall. legendary adventures for 1 to 4 fearless heroes, it bills itself as. It's not a dungeon crawl.
No.
It's not a deck builder. It's not a living card game, but it has elements of all of those things. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, definitely. It's got a few of those twists.
Each hero is a deck of cards and a player board. There's starting gear, basic feats, additional feats you buy for your deck as you go along and as you kill monsters and as you earn renown.
Renown, yes.
Was it called? Some of the characters that you can play in this game include Arani, the Dawnbreaker Cleric. Oh, she's so good. Crow the Seeker.
He's so stabby.
He's, yes. Ardenai the Arcane Archer.
His arrows are pointy.
Balthazar the Flatulent. I might have just made that one up.
He's so Mark.
You're playing through a series of face-down location tiles in various configurations, depending on what quest you're playing, moving towards a final enemy to complete one of 4 quests that come with the game. So how's it work? Well, yes. that was a good question that we found ourselves asking quite a bit, wasn't it? You're in a party represented by a little cardboard token. You travel in with the party to the location. You flip the location over, see what that does, draw a corresponding encounter card. A lot of randomness just generated from the decks that you're using. The encounter card will then generate random-ish enemies, depending on what type of location it is you find yourself in.
Yeah, the type of terrain, whether it be a wasteland or an ice land.
The enemies then pursue you, leaving the centre of the table to pester each character, namely the one with the highest focus at the time. You take your hero actions, they fight back. The encounter usually has some kind of end point, either defeat all the monsters or collect a certain number of tokens, and then it's rinse and repeat until you get through to the end. But, of course, that's not quite all of it. The hero actions when you're fighting the monsters are pretty much the guts of the game, and every hero plays quite differently. We found that, didn't we?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
You can do, on your go, one... just correct me if I'm wrong, guys. One regular action...
Yes, correct so far.
Any number of fast actions.
Yes.
And then there's also these things called reflex actions, which you can sometimes do on your own turn and sometimes do on other people's turns as reactions to things that happen.
And sometimes on the monster turns.
You might spend, for example, a bunch of fast actions to load up arcane power onto a scroll and then spend the regular action to trigger that attack. And the more arcane power you've got in there, it makes it more powerful. That kind of thing.
Yeah, or loading a weapon into from your hand, which is, you know, the card you're going to be able to use for power. Take a weapon from that and put it into your hero zone so that you can actually fight with it. So I guess it's almost thematically like stuff that doesn't really take time. It doesn't take time for me to unsheath my sword or to put my shield up, but it will take time to bash or do something, which is my regular action.
Yeah, and there is a limit to how many things you can carry or have loaded. And I think because we didn't get really into the sort of advanced part of the heroes, I found never really got to the stage where I didn't have enough slots to load stuff, whether it was feats or whether it was actual equipment. I never came across that limit, but I guess none of those characters, we didn't get to their advanced weapons, we didn't get to their super advanced spells where they start getting OP, really, did we?
Mm-hmm. What we were doing was looking for combos,
which
is really what this is about, along with sort of any other card game of its kind. Buying the advanced feats does help. It also helps if you know what it is to go looking for in advance. And there's lots of cheat sheets out there for this game. Your deck is really where it's all at, and that's spread over a few different locations. You've got the draw deck, you've got your hand, you've got your discards, you've got the berry pile.
Yep.
So as you're losing health, you're burying cards, never to return. You've got the hero area where your equipment is, and then you've got the advanced feats that are somewhere separate that you buy in. Every time you act or an attack a monster, it increases your focus, which makes you a bit more attractive to monsters for the next round, makes you stick out a bit more. You're also racing against the clock with some time cards that come out at the end of each round, counting down the markers on the central playing board in the quest area. There are rewards for defeating monsters.
Mm-hmm.
Have I missed anything?
No, but it has a lot of mechanics and a lot of things from almost every other game in this genre.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, of course, there's obvious comparisons to things like Pathfinder, yes, adventure card game.
Massively so.
And, you know, the other one for me was the Warhammer Quest adventure card game that I found there were some similarities.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got all the similarities to the various dungeon crawly type things that we've done.
Yep. And all of this is done with a bunch of iconography that you need to learn and the requisite crap rule book. Clearly written by somebody with English as a second language, and I don't mean that as a criticism because... Well, actually, no, you know what? I do mean it as a criticism because this is a mass market game for the English-speaking market. You need to proofread your bloody rule book.
Yep.
Okay?
There's a lot of English as a first language people who don't do that.
Well,
that's for sure.
That's absolutely correct. So, Mistfall, what did we think, boys?
Well, look, I'll start with the focus mechanic, which... Every player starts with a predetermined amount of focus, which, as you say, is kind of how much attention you're going to be getting from monsters when they come out. And I really like that mechanic because, you know, the monster will go to the player with the highest focus, and thematically, that hero is the biggest, the brashest, the most intimidating, so the monster is drawn to that. That makes sense.
Not a nice necessarily. Tension. Like, I agree, I like how it works, but there was a classic example in the last game. I was playing a cleric, and there was one card I had, I can't even remember what it was, wasn't particularly amazing. Might have even been when I healed up someone else. It bumped my focus up a massive amount, and I had this card in my deck twice. One turn I did it twice, and all of a sudden I'm maxed out on focus.
Yep.
From being a sort of quiet, weedy character standing at the back of the pack.
But you were saving everybody.
Exactly,
so,
which yeah. draws the attention of
the monsters. You're going to kill the magic guy.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I do like how it switches around who gets attacked.
Yes.
And the fact that you can plan that a little bit. So you can say, I don't really want to get to the front of the queue at this one because there's a really bad dude there. I just found it a little bit strange with the cleric. Yeah, I guess I can see thematically.
I liked it. And again, as soon as you have a monster in front of you that is drawn to you, your focus halves.
Mm.
So you're not going to get swamped by all of the monsters. They will be kind of evenly shared around the party.
So that's a cool moment. Putting together a killer combo is nice when you can get it happening.
Yes.
And the pursuit phase is sort of interesting when the monsters get divvied up for you to fight them. But look, overall, I think I can speak for all of us, found this to be an overly complicated hack and slash, which is nowhere near the amount of fun you want given the effort you have to put in.
Yeah, it was. I mean, the word that came to mind for me was ponderous. Like, we've played it a couple of times for, 4 hours plus.
Mm.
I mean, the first scenario, there are only, five tiles? And the second scenario, I think there were nine, but we only explored maybe five of them.
And we just wanted to race through it, really.
Yeah, the amount of time it took, we didn't defeat a massive amount of enemies, and I think that's maybe part of the falling down is the enemy, the battles just take too long and are not interesting.
Well, that's the thing, is that all your enemies have shields, and they can absorb a certain amount of physical damage or magical damage, and they'll deal some once it's their turn. But when you've got your deck, which you will cycle through relatively frequently, for lack of a better term, you don't really have those killer knockout blows until you get that one combination that will work beautifully, but then it'll work once, because part of playing that combo is you've then got to put the cards in the discard pile, or you've got to put them back
or maybe even bury it,
or you've got to put them back on the top of your deck, which means that you've got to draw them, which means you can't then play them the next action. So,
and I think this is a really good point you've got. Yeah, sorry, go on.
So that was it, is that those moments are brilliant when you have them, but they are few and very far between on a game that says it plays 2 hours, which very much does not.
And this is the thing about designing a strategy card game like this with characters that use different approaches. I think this is really hard to do, to have all these different decks that have all these different mechanics in them, and somehow they all manage to sort of pull it off, because the cards need to work together in sort of just enough ways. Not just one way.
Yes,
There's got to be flexibility, reasonably often enough to give you choices.
Yeah.
And also for character development.
And there just isn't.
No.
Like, there's one thing, you need one particular card to actually get the deck to work.
And the fact you've got, in your advanced feats that you've got to buy, each character would have 15 or 20 other cards. Some of them are duplicates, but, because you are only getting a certain amount of renown, you've got to share that in the party, you're using it sometimes to do other things apart from buying feats, you're only getting maybe one or two, if you're lucky, three of those advanced feats, you're not getting them until the end game. And I'll sort of contrast that with, look, a game that I didn't absolutely fall in love with, but comparing it to this, the Warhammer Quest Adventure card game, you have four cards, and on those cards, sometimes they'll have two different actions you can do, and then you can upgrade those to higher versions of those as you go with experience. So instead of dealing with a deck of 15 cards and then maybe another 15 you can upgrade, you're just worrying about four cards, and it's really simple to manage. But you've got a good variety of things you can do. You've got a really massive attack or a massive magic attack or some healing, or you've got a variety of things that you can manage within just four cards that makes it interesting. Mm. Whereas this, it's like, and I think the same in Descent, where, you know, you start off with only three or four actions that your character can do, and you might get one or maybe two extra one in an adventure, and gradually you power up. But that's a game where you're going to be playing week after week after week after week, not a game that you just sit down and have a big smash out of 4 hours. So just it gives way too much variety, but you don't, the variety doesn't deliver on anything.
It's also far more complicated than what it needs to be.
Well, it is.
You know, the rules are actually quite simple once you get to the nub of it. But geez, they're not presented in any kind of intuitive way.
No, they're not. And we did spend a hell of a lot of time going back to the rule book again and again and again. And look, once you get the hang of it, you will get the hang of it and it'll go a lot quicker. But we played it twice with the same group of people and it was not a speedy game at all. I think this is a game that really suffers from the bad side of the fun per minute equation.
Yep.
It's really just not fun enough. There is too much competition out there.
And it's another example of a game that just basically needed more development.
Yeah.
I think the whole thing's undercooked and it really needed some outside influence.
Yeah, if you strip away maybe about two-thirds of it, I reckon there could be something really good in there.
It reeks of some guy who's just spent months in his bedroom creating what he imagines is the perfect game. And there's a lot of game lore and flavor text along with this. I mean, it's a fairly uninspiring standard fantasy theme.
Yes.
One thing I noted is that there's no list of playtesters thanked in the credits on this, and I think that's probably where it fell down.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry to Passport. I'm sorry to Mr. Bukaki, whatever your name is.
Kubaki,
sorry.
Yes.
Mistfall is a missed fail.
Hey!
See what I did there?
Lol.
But it is available through Polymorph Games and Hobbies on polymorphgames.com.au
if you
really want to.
Yeah.
But there's other stuff there as well.
Well, I was going to say, look, if the idea of it interests you, then definitely check out something like Pathfinder, Warhammer Quest Adventure Card Game, Descent, of course. I mean, there's so many, isn't there?
I was even drawing a lot of parallels with Hand of Fate because you're similarly moving through a card-driven, generated scenario.
I would even say Ashes Rise of the Phoenixborn,
which
is a game. It's a game I'm very keen to get back to the table.
All right, well, it's a two-player game. Yeah, it's a two-player. I'm busy that night, so it'll just be you two.
All right, look, let's look ahead at some new releases which are up and coming. Gen Con just wrapped up last weekend. Leon gave us the preview. Mark's going to give us the look back after this on the Dice Men Cometh Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
It's nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too. That was the remarkably Australian Smith Street Band with Birthdays. You are with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. This week, proudly presented by Polymorph Games and Hobbies. And you can just buy all the stuff, including all the hot new releases from Gen Con. Hey, Mark?
There are a lot, Garth, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. But before I start to talk about them, I think we'll let a couple of other people talk about what, for Australians, was the hottest release of Gen Con, and that was the guys from Rule and Make, Alan and Alistair. Now, imagine they're in their hotel room late on a Saturday night. They've probably been out partying, and Trent gave them a call, and I imagine when he called, they were super hyped up.
Guys, I'm expecting you to sound a little bit more excited than what you sound. It's almost like you've been working hard or something. Come on, come on, come on! This is living
Gen Con 50.
This is living the dream, guys. Come on, living the dream.
Yeah, great.
So, paint the picture: you're in some anonymous hotel room, getting to know each other better than what you ever thought you possibly could. Sharing a room.
it's quaint.
So, how is Gen Con?
Gen Con's real awesome. I mean, this is Gen Con 50, 70,000 attendees. It's nothing like you've seen before, and it is grueling.
This is your first one, right?
Yes, it is. It's a convention for all the geeks, obviously. But even more so than PAX Australia, we found, is that these guys are here to play, and they're here to ask questions, and they're not afraid to ask them too. So, you know, set out all the formalities aside, they're going to run up to you and they're going to say, tell me everything you can about this game. So, you know, we're working hard, try to demo the games and show people what everything's about. And they're just, the passion is just unrelentless.
All right. Well, look, we're going to talk about Terminator in just a sec. But first, I just want to set things up. You're over there working with Passport Games, who are your local distributors, yeah? And you're demoing Rule and Make stuff. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. And so this gives you a chance to talk about Hand of Fate, I'm imagining.
Yeah, that's right. So this is the first time that I think the American sort of attendees have a first chance to see the game in the flesh. I think that that's one thing that I think a lot of the, our Australian sort of friends and colleagues and fans were able to get hold of sort of ahead of the American guys. But it's the same prototype that we had demoed at the event that you guys hosted. So they're able to see it and see what it, the final product is going to be like very soon.
And is there a widespread awareness of the Hand of Fate property from the video game as well?
Yeah, for sure. So we had probably about 30% of board gamers that just have no idea what the video game is like. Another sort of 30%, 40% of those that are sort of fans of the video games that didn't even know that the Kickstarter even happened. They just came by and goes, oh my God, I played the game. I didn't know that this thing was a thing now. So they're really happy with that. And we've got the rest of those are people who are both fans of the video game, know about the board game, and are also, you know, fanatic backers, and they came by and really just want to check the game out with us.
Alan, are you in any kind of position to give an update on production of Hand of Fate or fulfillment of the Kickstarter and how that's going?
Yeah. So the game currently is actively being developed. We're very close to finalizing the core game, and we're able to actually start moving into the expansions. We've given the update on to our Kickstarter backers, telling them that the production is due to, well, the design is due to finish in a month or two. And by the end of the year, that's when we'll start sending all the assets over to manufacturing. So manufacturing fulfillment sort of around February is what we're looking at.
All right, well, let's talk about the big Gen Con reveal of T-2029, the Terminator 2 Judgment Day board game. This is some big league shit, guys. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thanks.
This game actually had been in development since before Hand of Fate, so we've had to keep our mouths quiet for a long time. And, yeah, it's finally relieved that we're able to actually let people know about this.
So how did this actually happen? You know, because obviously not anyone can just go and produce a Terminator game. How did you enter the Cameronverse?
Through good timing, a series of fortunate and slightly unfortunate events sort of led to us being able to have Terminator 2. Essentially, we actually approached our licensor looking to get the Highlander license. That was what we wanted. And on a separate track, I was actually doing a design with a different designer on a game about AI. So these are two separate sort of situations happening. And through some unfortunate series of events, we've not been able to get the Highlander license because we were actually in a bidding war with another company. And we're not as big as the other one, so we just basically bowed out and said, we can't afford this. But at the same time, the licensor really took a liking of our approach, our pitch, and we were very professional about it. And they said, guys, we're really sorry you can't have Highlander, but we have the opportunity to pitch to the movie studio, Studio Canal, who owned the property, the possibility of getting Terminator 2. So we said, oh my God, that's an amazing sort of opportunity. But obviously, we didn't want to just go in getting any license. It was very fortuitous that we also had a game design that was around the concept of AI. And a lot of that is inspired by Terminator, but we never dreamed that it was actually going to be a thing that we could get. So everything just sort of fell into place, and we managed to secure it because we pitched the right game to the licensor, and they like what we had to show.
There's been a Terminator game on Kickstarter quite recently, which was which looked a little bit underwhelming, I guess.
For sure, I think that the Terminator 1 Kickstarter campaign that went out, I think it was last year, I believe, or earlier this year, is taking a very different approach to what we are taking the game. For starters, none of the art assets they're all original artwork, and we're taking a slightly more stylized look to Terminator rather than sort of doing like a straight sort of film to card situation. So one of the things that I think is important to message to people who are interested in this game is that this is not a miniatures dice-chucking tactical war game. This is a slightly more abstracted strategy, sort of a bigger war situation. So you're basically fighting against the very final few days of John Connor sort of approaching Skynet. So one thing that I think that the listeners of Diceman Cometh is going to be sort of very intrigued by is that this game design, it is designed by Ian O'Toole.
Yes, I was about to ask you about this. Ian O'Toole from Perth, gone from graphic design to game design. I'm probably not that surprised because I knew he had that passion, but it's a big step for him. And now that it's attached to this property, he must be shitting bricks.
yeah, it's definitely a very big move. When we first started working with Ian on various other projects, he's also associated and is working on Hand of Fate as well with us. It was very apparent that he had the chops to be able to do game design. It was very apparent that he was able to think through a lot of things and goes, guys, these are some of the ways you can improve on the game. These are some of the ways that you can think about. And I think this is just based on industry experience, given that he's been working in the field for so long. But yeah, we're extremely happy with the results, and we can't wait for this to go to Kickstarter in 6 weeks.
But he hasn't done the actual illustration or the graphic design himself. You've outsourced that. Is that correct?
So the art is done by various different artists, one of which is Stephen Gibson, who we've worked with in the past. Art direction is done by Dan May. So we have some really sort of interesting local talents that is sort of coming on board to work on this collectively. And Ian is actually working on the graphic design of the game as well as the game design.
And it looks amazing, guys. It really does. I know you say it's not a tactical miniatures game, but it really does look like a sort of, like a depiction of those few moments from the two films where you see the future war and you got the Jeep on there, you got the hunter killer. It really does look like a scene from the battlefield.
Yeah, that's we've worked really hard to try and sort of capture that that experience, and it sounds like we might have sort of done that successfully.
All right, so what is it, Saturday night there that I'm talking to you guys?
Yes, that's correct.
All right, you got two more days, and then what?
One more day, and then we've got a sort of free morning tomorrow on Monday, and then we fly out
and straight back to the salt mines.
Yeah, that's it. No rest for the wicked, eh?
Oh, Alistair, good. You're there. You're the quiet one.
I'm dodging people going in and out of their hotel rooms. I'm wandering in the corridor so that Alan and I can talk on our separate mobile devices without interrupting each other.
So Indianapolis Wi-Fi is as good as the NBN then?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I hope to be hooked up to it soon. Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm glad to speak to both of you because I know Alistair's the one that makes all of Alan's crazy ideas happen. And it sounds like you guys have had a very successful first Gen Con. Can I just say, I'm so proud of you guys. Well done.
Thank you so much.
All right, so that was Alan and Alistair, of course, from Rule and Make, the tiny little Australian design studio that could. They're going from strength to strength. And if you want to know more about that game, there is a website, t2029.com. Not a lot of news, though, apart from the photos that have come out of Gen Con 50.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't even appeared on Board Game Geek yet, Gus.
No, I was going to add it in and try and get some of that delicious geek gold. And I just chatted to Ian O'Toole saying, can we get a little bit of a heads up on this? And he replied back, So thanks, Ian.
So look, I've got so many games to talk about. How about we'll throw it to a track and come back and I'll start talking about them. Although maybe we need to put a retroactive language warning, Trent, on that little interview.
Please, I'm sure it's a couple of S-bombs. I've been doing a lot of interviews with people in different time zones lately, so I do them in my slippers and my dressing gown. Of a morning with the first cup of coffee. So if it's just one or two S-bombs, that's the least that can happen.
Yeah, of course.
It's the Dice Men Cometh Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. Thanks to our mates at Polymorph Games and Hobbies, polymorphgames.com.au. Board game publisher Grail Games was begun to serve one purpose, to reprint older board games that are impossible to find and to bring some great little games from Asia to the English market.
That's two reasons.
Yeah. Okay, Grail Games... two main purposes are to reprint older classics and to publish great games from Asian publishers and designers.
And don't forget the Mike line, which are some really cool little card games with niche themes like Elevensies, Matcha, Circus Flaccati.
And they strive to make games both affordable and with high quality components.
Don't forget the nice art.
They're all relatively simple games to teach, but with lots of strategy. Grail Games does just as the name suggests. These are games that are worth seeking out.
Oh, like Indiana Jones.
They belong in a museum.
And they have lots going on at the moment.
Kashgar is now available for pre-order from their online store.
That's a triple deck builder thing that was never put out in English, this game.
And Kinesia's Crisscross will make you jump, jump. It's up for pre-order as well. And they have all the oink games like Deep Sea Adventure and... Insider.
Yes, so that's all the pre-orders on grailgameshop.com.au, but also...
Deep Sea Adventure, I'd like to try that.
Oh, Kashgar looks great.
And Crisscross, it's one of those roll and write games.
Yes, yes, and it makes you jump, jump. But also, the classic board game Stevenson's Rocket will be hitting Kickstarter on August 31.
In Australia time?
Yeah, they're Australian.
Like Vegemite and Vegemite Cheesy Bites.
And they're just about to deliver King's Road to Kickstarter backers.
That's another game designed by Rainer Knizia.
And still with great art.
Oh, I wish I backed that.
Well, thanks to Grail Games, we at the Dice Men will be giving away a copy of King's Road, are giving away a copy of King's Road, to two lucky listeners. And all you have to do is answer this question. If you were king for a day of a board game universe... which one would it be? Which one would you like to rule over? Garth?
As long as it is not Tante Quoro.
Oh, that was mine!
I know, which is why I don't want to be anywhere near that universe.
Mark, your turn.
Oh, look, it'd have to be Twilight Imperium 11-sies edition, wouldn't it?
What?
So I could have morning tea with all those aliens.
Anyway, the contest closes in a couple more weeks, September 14. We're going to be wrapping it up, and we'll be announcing the two winners here and on the Facebooks and the internets. And get those entries in, goddammit, and you might win one. And while you're doing that, check out grailgames.com.au for all the info on all of Grail's titles, and look for Stevenson's Rocket on Kickstarter soon. Radio 99.3 FM, that's the name of the radio station. The names of the people who help us out to put this show on are Polymorph Games and Hobbies, and the name of their website is polymorphgames.com.au, and the special code you put in is Dice Men. One word.
All caps.
To get yourself an extra 5% off.
Off the already discounted prices on off normal retail price.
Now,
just
as
amazing.
Per usual, we've been crapping on so much and having too much fun, we've left a whole bunch of stuff to talk through at the very end of the show. First up, I've got to say a big cheerio to our mate Leon.
Hey, Leon.
Who we haven't seen for a little while. You remember Leon? He's the fourth dice man. The younger, the token young'un that we bring in. I mean, sure, he's an Oompa Loompa.
Yeah.
But we love him.
We do.
And we miss him. Leon, come back on the show soon, all right?
He's probably busy getting his man cave. But anyway, hot off the presses, Ian O'Toole replied back to me with a little bit more than,
Oh, okay.
So here's an exclusive. When I asked him about, just tell us a bit about the game mechanics, I'll quote him here. I've got approval. So, and I quote, something-something decisions, something-something miniatures, something-die something-something.
And that's a worldwide exclusive!
However, he did then follow that up with something a little bit more delicious, which was, it's a cooperative game set in the year 2029 during the final hours of the war against the machines. You play commanders in the Resistance Army. It's a dice manipulation game which asks players to carefully assign dice around the board to not only carry out their actions, but to enable the actions of other players.
I wonder if there's going to be a hidden traitor. Like, is one of you going to be a Terminator?
Oh, come on. That's got to be in there.
I'm sure.
I don't know.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm sure there's a variant that perhaps Alan might have mentioned in one of the many interviews he's done.
They were originally infiltration units,
yes,
if you remember.
That's right.
Okay.
Anyway, Mark.
Yeah, so look, Gen Con. Speaking of Ian O'Toole and Gen Con, another game where he was the artist and probably the graphic designer was Red Scare. Now, social deduction games are hot at the moment, and Red Scare is basically two teams, a blue team and a red team. But part of the interesting part of this is you've got these red glasses and you put the red glasses on and it makes things become visible that weren't otherwise visible.
Ooh.
And it's sort of how you communicate with your team with these glasses. I'm not sure 100% how it works, but more work by Ian O'Toole.
So you put them on and you see everything in CommuVision or something, do you?
Something like that, I'm sure. Well,
but just like the old 3D glasses.
Look, yeah. There has been a little bit of a buzz about it. Now, of course, the 2029 was the big release from Gen Con. Another big release from Gen Con, Star Wars Legion, the Star Wars mini combat game.
Oh, right, because we need another Star
That's
Wars
right.
game.
We do. We do, Trent. We really do.
33 minis, and I think the biggest complaint about this game is that because they've done such a great job with X-Wing, where those ships come painted, everyone was like, well, why aren't these minis pre-painted? When have you ever had a minis game that comes pre-painted?
So is this another combat game?
So it's
How is it different from X-Wing?
Well, I guess it's X-Wing, but with dudes on a map as opposed to ships flying in space.
It's characters and people instead of
so stormtroopers fighting against rebel troops and Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker and, well, I don't know that he's Yoda, but the base game comes with 33. And look, I'm sure, I think it comes with a couple of speeders and a little AT-AT thingy, or not the AT-ST, the little two-legged
terrain.
One.
Is it compatible with X-Wing?
Well, no, because that has little ships, game. And these are where the person is bigger than the ship.
So hang on. Fantasy Fighter got a little bit of a thing going on here, haven't they?
Well,
like, you start big. You start with rebellion,
yeah,
and you're fighting over planets.
Well,
fighting over galaxies. When you go to a planet and you go, I think I've found a rebel base, let's have a fight, you switch it to X-Wing, and you do the tactical miniatures air fight.
Or surely Armada first.
Oh, Armada first! Then you go to X-Wing, then you have to go down to ground level, and this is where Legion can fit in, surely.
And then, of course, if you wanted to go even further and follow the adventures of one or two particular miniatures, then you go to Imperial Assault.
There's
that is
a
one
nerd
hell of a metagame.
Somewhere, someone who has already worked all this out. I'm sure.
Look, couple more exciting for me games. Breaking Bad, the board game, was demoed at Gen Con. You know
oh, my God, Mark,
I love
Breaking Bad. He's never not seen in a Breaking Bad T-shirt.
Or hoodie, that's right.
Except when he's wearing his Dice Man hoodie, which is available on our website.
Yes. So
not your one, but other ones.
You know, there's not a lot to know about this. There's only a couple of photos on Board Game Geek, and I believe it's by a French manufacturer. So they're showing the first English version, and you play as one of the competing factions. So you can play as Los Poyos Hermanos faction. You can play as the gang that Walter sold the blue crystal to. You can play as the Mexican
alert.
Cartel.
Spoiler alert! Come on, I haven't watched it.
Oh, okay.
So this is drug dealing for fun and profit, the game.
Sounds a bit like Sons of Anarchy, but in the Breaking Bad world. Yeah, I talked a couple of weeks ago about Mountains of Madness, social deduction game. That game was available for purchase at Gen Con, so that's pretty exciting. And I don't know whether you guys heard about a little game called Coaster Park. So you're building roller coasters, you're bidding, and there's an auction mechanic where you're buying pieces for your roller coaster, except you build an actual roller coaster.
A real live roller coaster.
Well, it's a marble run.
Oh, okay. Well,
but, you know,
cool.
With all these different pieces, as it's described as quite a gateway level game, but the fact that you build this sort of quite large roller coaster that you then have to run a marble down and make sure that it actually works.
Is it like the Mousetrap Rube Goldberg machine?
Yeah, but good.
Only one that actually works,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Look, another one, we're big fans of Five Tribes. So if they had Five Tribes, Whims of the Sultans. It brings a fifth player to Five Tribes, but it also introduces new cities tiles where visiting the city gives you opportunity to win glory as you fulfill excessive requests from the Sultan by completing these Whim of the Sultan cards.
Gee,
so
that's a game we have to get back to the table.
Yeah, same thing, but I don't know if it needs it. I think Five Tribes just feels a really nice niche of a game.
We haven't played it that much, though.
No.
Let's move on.
Okay.
Talk about filling niches. Bruno Faiduti.
Yes, tell us more, Mark.
Bruno Faiduti.
Tell us more.
Has got his adult party game, Kama Sutra.
Oh, this.
Where you draw a Kama Sutra card. It shows you a sexual position. And then
we're for real with this.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Cutesy little cartoony art, though.
Of two naked people bumping uglies.
Yep, that's right. And then each couple assumes that position and attempts to pop a balloon somehow in that position. The first couple that breaks the balloon scores the point and gets that card, and you move on to the next position.
Well, look, normally I would love to get a review copy of just about any game. But can you imagine anything worse than the four dice men having a go at this game?
Oh, dear.
Anyway.
And, of course, if that's your thing, if you want to get four blokes together and play this, you go right ahead and
do it.
Totally. But not us four.
Yeah, and hopefully one day those four blokes might be able to get married, although not all to each other.
Exactly. You could do a lot better than any of us.
That's right.
Is the point I think we're making.
Now, Plaid Hat, who we haven't heard a lot from for a little while maybe, have brought out a new one, and it really reminded me of a similar to being to Mice and Mystics. This is Stuffed Fables, where you are playing the role of stuffed toys, saving the child you love from a scheming evil mastermind. But one of the amazing things about this was you have a big book that shows you how to play the game, but you fold it out. The book becomes the game board.
Yeah.
And so when you flip the page, like, the game board changes. It's all really working well together. You've got lovely minis of these stuffed toys, but it's their first of the storyboard games.
Nice.
Look, a couple more quick ones.
Super quick. I've got something to do, Mark.
Expanse.
There was that game, Great Western Trail.
Oh,
I had something. I can't remember.
Okay, there's a game based on The Expanse, which is the sci-fi television series, which is described as Twilight Struggle meets El Grande with some pew-pew fighting.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very tall order and very, very big call.
But we'll know because Aiden, good friend of the show, and painter par excellence, will be getting it.
Great series, I have to say, The Expanse.
Yeah, I haven't watched it, but it's worth watching.
Yeah.
You've got the first expansions for Sheriff of Nottingham. It's called Merry Men, and it adds a sixth player, but it also adds five different little mini expansions.
No, that's a great looking expansion.
A new version of Sid Meier's Civilization.
Well, that'll be a quick party game.
A new Stefan Feld called Merlin, which is a dice action game. And that'll probably do.
Perfect. Thanks so much
for that.
All right, well, I've got two quick things. First thing I want to talk about is our Grail Games competition.
Oh, yeah.
With thanks to Grail Games and David Harding from Grail Games, who has kindly given us a couple of copies of King's Road to give away, and also a copy of Medici the Card Game. I've brought my copy tonight. We might be able to play that after the show.
Oh, yeah.
So just remember, to enter and be in the running to win one of these games, all you need to do is email us in, which is dicemencometh@gmail.com, and answer a simple question: is if you were king or queen for a day, which board game universe would you like to rule?
Yeah, it wouldn't be Mistfall, I tell you what.
No.
Can you imagine? It'd be so depressing.
I wouldn't mind being king of the Kama Sutra universe.
Oh, Mark.
Anyway, can I talk about something else that I did?
Well, get your entries in via @DiceMenCometh on Twitter or DiceMenCometh@gmail.com for copies of King's Road and Medici the Card Game.
Yes.
But, yes, we also wanted to talk about another great Australian game, The Brigade.
Yeah, that's true. Brigade, which we've talked about as part of our Kickstarter campaigns, and you may have heard they sponsored us recently, so you might have heard some ads that we've put on our episode. But look, they are smashing it. They're almost at 300% funded. What I did only a week or so ago was jumped onto Tabletopia, which is this fantastic kind of sandbox board game system where you can go on and play games, played with Alex, one of the designers, and Ben, another one of the designers, and Matt from the Campaigner magazine, who's based in South Australia. And we played live on the internet for anyone to watch a game of this from start to finish, which was a lot of fun, I must say, because in The Brigade, you are all playing competing fire wardens, trying to put out the fires in the town of Tinderbox, that is not Southern Tasmania. We've said that plenty of times before. It's all focused around the central four pieces of this sort of tile board of various shops and establishments centered around Pyromancer's University, which has thematically a big cloud of thunder and fire above it, and it's just raining down
sort of
fireballs.
3D element on the board as well.
Well, that was one of the stretch goals that has been unlocked, which is the Pyromancer's University is now a papercraft 3D thing.
Oh,
so it's going to look really, really sweet when it comes out. But look.
And when you set light to it.
I know. Well, that's the legacy style after you've played it. So look, we played it. We played the whole game start to finish in an hour, which is right on the playtime because it's very simple in terms of the mechanics. The player board is right there and leads you the way. You can move your brigade, or you can move your wagon, or you can put out fires, or you can recruit new crew, which you'll need to do. And basically, you're just trying to gain the loyalty of the town of Tinderbox. And there's a couple of win conditions. So if you get all five different coloured buildings as part of the board, you get them to be loyal to you, you win. Or if you get four of the same colour, you get the win. Or if it all turns to smithereens and just burns to the ground, whoever's got the most points is going to win. But it's a good, simple, well-made and beautiful-looking Australian game that is also really well-priced. It's $49, about $60 Australian, including shipping.
It sounds like a bit like Mafia Fireman, like, you look after me, I'll make sure you don't burn down. But if you don't pay up, crackle, crackle, crackle.
You are being so racist right now. So just off the chart with the racism.
Hey, before we go, look, I had one more Gen Con release I need to tell you about because it's, imagine.
Oh, is it an expansion for Great Western
Trail? No, think of, it's called Dynamite Nurse. It's a card game with deck building where you're having a mysterious sword in the sorcery world where you're helping people to heal and you're competing. It's Tanto Quarry.
I've got no idea what's going on.
It's Tanto Quarry, but with nurses instead of maids.
We finished the Gen Con update. Why are you coming back in with more of the Gen Con update? The show's about to finish.
I have a soft spot for Tanto Quarry.
You're trying to squeeze more Mark into the show than what there absolutely needs
There's
to be.
There's never enough Mark in this show.
I beg to differ.
We'll have to get
Leon
back
in. Oh, Dynamite Nurse.
I'm going to turn Mark's microphone off.
Wonderful.
What?
And we're going to say goodbye.
Yes, we are. So, look, thanks so much for listening. Thank you to Polymorph Games and Hobbies. Please, if you've got the time and the inclination, go and give us a 5-star review on iTunes or listen. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at @DiceMenCometh. If you want to see some of Mark's pretty pictures, which he's good at because you don't hear him, go to @Instagram and go to DiceMenCometh that way.
1,500 followers, baby. Yeah.
That's about it. Can we turn him off even more?
No!
Let's just kill him.
All right.
Thanks to Polymorph Games and Hobbies at polymorphgames.com.au. We are the Dice Men Cometh. We are out of here. Catch you next week.
Bye! Bye!
You've been listening to another edit of the Dice Men Cometh. It's broadcast each week on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. It's chopped up and turned into a podcast. But if you're curious about listening to the show in its original format, you can do that on edgeradio.org.au. You can also find us on the DiceMenCometh.com. If you want to support us, you can jump onto Patreon. If you want to support us but you don't want to give us any money, that's fine too. Just leave a 5-star review on iTunes. Yes, I realise I'm asking you to lie for us. And if you really want to support us, get over to our sponsor, Polymorph Games and Hobbies, and buy something for God's sake from polymorphgames.com.au.